right, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, gather around, gather around. We have another fantastic guest for you today, and I am hyped up. Man, I can't even tell you how hyped up I am. It's been a long time since we've seen Bitcoin trade like this. Brendan, how are you feeling, dude?
I mean, I'm feeling great. How can you not feel great when we're seeing one of the fastest and strongest recoveries in Bitcoin history? And man, do we have the perfect guest to get on at a time like this? So we're stoked all around.
And dude, it's not even Bitcoin, right? I mean, everything is moving. It's just a real vindication of all those conversations we had at the bear market lows about how altcoins aren't dead and there's going to be a revival. And man, we've seen the revival. And really, one of the characters at the precipice of this revival is a founding partner of Galaxy. This is Steve Kurtz, and he's joining us today to talk about his background, everything they're doing at Galaxy, and his views of the market. So Steve, thanks for joining us, and we're happy to have you here.
Yeah, hey fellas, it's a hell of a day for it. I'm excited like you guys are. I'm a little tired because my little kiddos kept me up last night, but that just had me looking at the screens all night. So it was all good. I'm trying to keep the adrenaline going.
Hey guys, TiVo here to tell you about the Eufy Video Lock, a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell all in one. That's right, 3-in-1 for triple the security. It's easy to install. All you need is a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. It gives you keyless entry, so no more fumbling your keys when you have your hands full coming back from the grocery store. No more worry about the kids losing a house key. No more worry about a guest losing the house key or forgetting the passcode on your door. And for Airbnbers, it's a no-brainer as you can change the passcode at will between renters. It has available fingerprint recognition, and it has AI self-learning chip, so the more you use it, the more accurate it's going to be. You will have no anxiety with the battery charging. It is a rechargeable battery, and it lasts around 4 months, but don't worry, when it's low, it'll give you plenty of weeks' notice, and also, it always comes with a physical key as a backup. There's no monthly fee, unlike other brands that charge you a monthly fee to get your backup recordings. They're always recorded locally, and you will always have access. Customer support for the Eufy Video Lock is 24/7, so you don't have to worry about any issues you have, and it comes with an 18-month warranty. What I love about this product is it's truly all-in-one with the 3-in-1. You don't have to go out and buy multiple parts. It's all in this package with the Eufy Video Lock. So if you're interested in learning more, go on Amazon and search Eufy Video Lock. That's EUFY Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock. Again, that's EUFY Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock. Get complete control over your front door.
That's awesome. God bless them. They have no idea what's going on. They have no idea that their father is leading the charge for the future of their generation, so that their generation isn't, completely, burdened with bad debt and horrible assets. And there's actually people fighting for them, but they're so innocent. They just want to be with daddy.
Although my daughter does. I mean, she loves the Pudgy Penguins, right? She's loved them from the beginning. It's been a fun journey. People wonder why NFTs needed to exist. They exist because little kids love Pudgy Penguins.
don't tell all of my NFT trader friends who take it really seriously that are in their 30s.
Listen, it's hard not to be serious about it when we have a, what is it, 20 ETH floor for Pudgies now. I mean, it's like, I think the little Pudgies are like 2 or 3 ETH. So it's been quite a journey. I mean, it's an interesting point, right? Like everyone laughs at PFP projects. And then some of them go away, but then there's one that comes out of nowhere, and it's kind of like how ETH survived the last bear cycle. Yeah. And Bitcoin survived 2 cycles ago, and Solana survived this cycle. And so you just like the things that stick around, there's a reason for it. And the arrogance of some people to dismiss that is consistently how people stop, making money or miss out on the crypto promise from a financial perspective. Like, it just keeps happening.
They can't get out of their own ego.
Yep. That's it. It is an ego thing. It's a weird thing. I said, the one thing I haven't figured out over the last 7 years of this is why do people who don't like it care so much? I just don't get it. It makes no sense to me.
Wow. Yeah. It's a really profound point. And at the end of the day, I think human nature is a little selfish, and they just don't like to see other people win when they could have won the whole time. Like, Bitcoin was always there for everybody to buy, right? You just had to spin up a Coinbase account or, go buy the Galaxy fund on the, I think the Toronto Stock Exchange. There's a million ways to express you know, a bullish position, and everybody just doesn't want to see everybody else making money. It's just crazy.
It's weird. I've never thought like that, right? There's plenty to go around, and it's, I mean, the craziest part of all this is it's just still so early. Like, that's the craziest thing. I mean, we're a couple months in, not even, to the Bitcoin ETF. You know, we're going to launch some products in Europe in a month. I mean, some of these global markets, everyone in the ETF world is talking about the U.S. Wealth channel and how big that is. And that's totally true. That's a huge untapped market. But LATAM is untapped. I mean, you know, broadly, right? APAC is desperate for, you know, institutional names that are delivering crypto products. We haven't even started to unpack the global institutional adoption piece. It's just, there's so many layers to this that, you know, I don't think we've seen anything like it yet. I think the numbers that are coming out are astounding. Even by our, you know, sort of rose tinted glasses standards, and it's just very clear that, to your point earlier, right, there's a reason that it's more than just Bitcoin. And so we've seen this, you know, again, in multiple crypto cycles, like the cycling of capital and down the stack, so to speak, and then talent follows, and then, you know, more venture dollars follow, and you have this virtuous cycle. And now you have a much better starting point for that money to be deployed, right? There is still speculation, of course. There's still stuff that doesn't make sense. There's still some memes, and that's okay. But there's so many things that are real now that it's I think I said it recently, it's actually intellectually dishonest to say that there's nothing in this space that's investable when you look under the hood and if you start from a blank slate. So that's what we're excited about. We feel like we're, you know, really tired after doing this 24/7 for all these years. And it really does feel like the starting line of the new race. And this is the race that really matters for us. So we're trying to find the energy to carry it forward.
Yeah, I don't think the masses understand just how much the crypto market has recovered. I just went on a little vacation and, you know, people just casually talk about what they do and they go, oh yeah, you work in crypto. You know, like, what is that? You know, is it at 10K now? And it's like, no, it's actually almost at all-time highs. Like, Bitcoin's almost at all-time highs. And they're like, why? It's not backed by anything. None of these altcoins are. And you're like, well, actually, the majority of altcoin projects now are profit generating projects. And they go, what do you mean? And you walk them through something like MakerDAO or like one of the many other profit making projects out there. And it just blows their mind because they don't understand that, number one, all-time highs are actually really close on things like Bitcoin. And a number of altcoins have already hit new all-time highs. And that, number two, a lot of the projects that are out there now are not just like a Dogecoin or a Pepe. Like, they're actually businesses that are generating, in some cases, hundreds of millions of dollars. So
Well, it's intellectually lazy, right? You bucket to your point earlier about how people reflexively think, you bucket an entire space one way, and my thought from the beginning was sort of, you know, where are the smartest people going? And disproportionately, both in my friend group and also just from what I was observing, having worked in finance before, like, the really smart people are going into crypto, and really smart people figure it out. And so, you know, there are a lot of lessons for anyone who's paying attention over the last 5 years, 3 years, even 1 year. And the fact that some of these people have been enterprising and fast and dynamic and sort of tweaking models in a way that makes sense is not a surprise at all. So it's, you know, it's great to see. I'm excited about the venture bets in the space, but I'm also excited about the token side. And so it's unusual that we have this. I still think it's a spring. Like, it's not summer yet, right? We haven't even hit the halving. And so I feel like the next 9 months are going to be one of those, like, man, just try to keep up and stay focused and remember what you learned in the bear market is probably the advice that I would give to people.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny. It's like, right now it feels so vindicating and everybody's, you know, feeling good and like, you know, a little bit of retribution and all that stuff, but it's not always going to be, you know, as fun. So enjoy the good times while they're here, but, you know, understand that the good times don't last forever.
That's broadly right. I mean, it's also like the good times are also an evolution. And so I think it's interesting that we're so far into crypto now that people have, like, the same way people look back, like, oh man, it was so great in the 50s or the 70s or this, like, bizarre nostalgia that we have societally. People are having for crypto, like, when it was a simpler time with just Bitcoin, like, that's not going to happen. It's going to continue to change. And obviously the AI overlay is there. And so you have to, even if you've done well in the space, you have to continue to force yourself to keep up with the competition or with the developments. And it's happening at a really rapid clip right now.
Yeah, if you're here in crypto, you certainly can't be a Luddite. You can't be a romantic about the past bull runs. You have to be forward-looking, and there is a lot of exciting things on the horizon. You mentioned one sector, AI. We spent a lot of time talking about RWAs or bringing real-world assets on-chain and lending against them, and we talk a lot about decentralized physical infrastructure, aka DPIN. I want to hear from you, Steve. Just, you know, what's your sort of prognostication on how all this plays out? What part of the crypto markets excite you the most?
Oh man, I mean that's a great question. Obviously, well, look, I mean, taking a step back, Galaxy, while we're full of degens, we've found a lane that's more institutional grade, and so perhaps by DNA, but certainly like our day jobs is focused on what makes sense for that lane and how do you kind of get there. I think that's really important for all aspects of crypto, because I think you need the full ecosystem. And yes, you lose, to the point of being nostalgic, you lose some things along the way to that. But I think what you gain is a lot more rich and significant over time. And so like personally, what I spend most of my time on is whether it's, you know, orange pilling, the TradFi side, whether it's finding products and structures that are, on the path to bringing people into the space, or whether it's this weird hybrid, which is what's most exciting. Like the thing that's big picture most exciting to me is the sort of great awakening that's happening at top 10 banks, top 10 asset managers, top 10 wealth platforms, and what I mean by that is it's sort of like the Bitcoin ETF was a bag of bricks that hit any naysayer internally in those places with force. And so now it's no longer like, well, is Ethereum okay? It's like, when's the Ethereum ETF? And then it's like, well, wait a minute, how about, just the learning that happens quickly on the back of such a result from the Bitcoin ETF is already having everyone talking about Solana, is already having everyone talking about WorldCoin. It's already having everyone accelerating their plans for tokenization. I think that is almost impossible to overstate the significance of over a 1-2 year period in terms of the market cap of crypto, in terms of the capital, the reputational aspects of crypto, the breadth of what's going to be expressed through crypto rails over time. And I do think you need those that are going to be disrupted trying to not get Enron to help drive the disruption. Which is a very strange path, but I think it's a necessary path. So I'm excited about that. I still worry about pockets of this. I think DeFi has a hard road in the U.S. Forgetting my personal feeling for DeFi and truly crypto native systems. I'm worried about the politics generally. I mean that's not just a crypto comment. That's an AI comment. I think we need wisdom in D.C. I think we haven't done a great job of articulating what's at stake from the perspective of someone in D.C. and how they think. Like it's fine to be right in your own head, but that's not how you actually make change. And so I wouldn't say it's all, super positive, but I do think that what I described before that is what's going to be the path to then, have everyone sort of say, this is going to be okay. And it's not as scary as it seems. And the impulse to control is obviously still there from politicians. And from that perspective, we have a road to really climb, and it's going to take a couple of years at a minimum. So I would just temper it a little bit, like just because totally. The prices are up doesn't mean that we have this open season in the U.S. on every aspect of crypto that I personally love, although some aspects are opening up very dramatically before our eyes.
Yeah, no, I've got a lot to say on that. On one end, like you said, those opportunities that are opening up, we just had the Uniswap Foundation kind of release the proposal about, kind of fee sharing. And it's like, there's no public sort of, SAF accounting bulletin from the SEC saying like, DeFi coins can do this. But I think they're reading the tea leaves, the writing's on the wall. DeFi is finding a little bit more acceptability and stuff. And I want to also highlight, speaking of the SAF accounting bulletins, from the SEC, the Banking Policy Institute and the American Banking Association, or I don't want to butcher those. I think that's what they're called. They released like a very strongly worded letter to Gary Gensler at the SEC saying like, hey, like there's some really constrictive, really accounting policies and things that make holding Bitcoin really capital inefficient on these balance sheets. And so, like you said, banks are having the great awakening moment. And I think that's really important. But my question to you as the expert on digital assets is why? Why right now are banks starting to have that wake up moment? Is it just this short-term trading opportunity. People see the flows, people see the demand. They say, we just want to get our, you know, our paws on this. Or do they actually start to, as you said, feel, you know, like they're ingesting the orange pill, and they look at, this is a long-term, you know, very promising ecosystem with tremendous long-term opportunity.
I think you can't, like one of the most non-obvious ways to answer that question is, let's just take the last 6 years, right? I'm 38 years old. There are a lot of 38-year-olds in banks that have been thinking about, even if they weren't in crypto, you know, professionally, personally, they've been in cryptos. So anyone who's under 40, broadly, I think is okay with Bitcoin, Ethereum, you know, some certain aspects of crypto, like let's call that, you know, 75%, 80%, 90%, whatever it is, not 25%. Mm-hmm. And those people are getting real jobs at these places. And so there was this idea of, you know, hey, maybe I can make my career at Goldman Sachs 5 years ago if I'm the first one to bring up tokenization, or if I'm the first one to bring up Bitcoin. But and what that did was very significant for the moment that we're in. It built institutional knowledge, and it started the process of popping the air out of the balloon of why this sucks, why it makes no sense, why we could never do it, and why it's, you know, not as like that's a long term process that has to happen from within the walls of each institution. And so that sort of bottom up swell, which is very crypto, by the way, right? It's no one's saying, you know, the regulatory clarity is there, go after that commercial opportunity. This is very much individual and driven through these channels. And so even the conservative places, maybe they added a Bitcoin private fund, maybe they added an Ethereum private fund. They did one thing broadly, all of them. But what that one thing required them to do was to have compliance groups, risk groups, and senior management all align with that being okay. And for them to get okay, they had to have more meetings than you could possibly imagine, like hundreds of meetings, right? And so what that did was sort of air, you know, some of the grievances that didn't make any sense, and allowed them to then be knocked down one by one. And the biggest grievance, of course, is, you know, the regulatory environment in the U.S. doesn't allow it. Well, that's not true now, right? At a minimum, we've seen the courts moving in one direction. We've seen the SEC have to go on Bitcoin, on the ETF. If you extend that even further, election year, who knows who's in the seat next year? It's very clear that, you know, there isn't clear guidance. There isn't clear legislation. That feels a little bit un-American that we're cherry picking industries and that kind of thing. And so I just think at some point, the inertia of all of that, and then, you know, senior managers or CEOs that are saying, hey, wait a minute, who are our customers really? Right. If I'm thinking 5-10 years ahead and forget how I feel as a boomer or whatever, I got to think about, you know, I got to think about digital rails. I got to think about AI. I got to think about, you know, my employees that want to, you know, move up in their, like all that stuff starts to move it from, I hate it, to, man, it's not going away, to like, okay, maybe. And then one or two go, now it's institutional FOMO. We've never had institutional FOMO because you've never had the scalable result in terms of supporting ETFs as an AP, being an issuer of the ETFs, seeing what the ETFs can do for other assets in crypto, seeing what the tokenized wrapper could do better than ETFs. Like all of those things are now out in the wild and you can't put them back in. And so the reason I mentioned the Great Awakening is that, you know, you have a lag between an event, which is currently the price going up, and a Bitcoin ETF being launched, and the scurrying around at the sea level, and then prioritizing for the year. Like that's now being set in this very moment. So that's why I think it's different this time, and why we still have 9, 12, 18, 24 months to be thinking about a bull market that's driven by institutional adoption. And we haven't even talked about institutional buyers. That's just sort of, you know, asset managers, banks, and wealth platforms. Right. So that's how I think about it.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like all these companies, even yourself included over at Galaxy, they looked at the landscape. They said, this isn't going to be easy. There's going to be a lot of hurdles, but the end goal is going to be very much worth it. So despite all the hurdles that might be into the future, they said, we're going to take this approach. We're going to go after this thing. Because like you said, looking at that next generation, I think they see that there's a lot of interest and opportunity there. And so over with just...
You're bringing up such a good point, which is that, you know, the reasons to do it have always been real, right? Yeah. The macro picture is the macro picture. Everyone's watching what's happening with our national debt. Everyone's watching what's happening with the degradation of fiat currencies everywhere. Look at Argentina, like, et cetera. So
the emperor has no clothes.
right. And so as much as they don't like, you know, these broad statements about like, well, everything sucks and the traditional system sucks, there's still a reality to what's being held up against that, whether it's the macro picture or, you know, the like Ethereum doesn't sound that crazy now that you see how fast AI came out of nowhere. It just like, yeah. Not that they're remotely the same things, but like, you know, programmable money, smart contracts, like these basic concepts for us are just stupidly obvious when you get smacked in the face with AI as an example. And so there's just too many, between the advent of AI, between the staying power and resilience of crypto, between the macro picture, which if anything is becoming more obviously, you know, aligned with a lot of what crypto represents. And then everything I just talked about, it's like at some point, you know, you have to lead, right? You can't just sit and put your head in the sand, even if you, you know, wish the world wasn't that way. The world is that way, you know?
Yeah.
So I didn't mean to cut you off. I just, it, you know, got me going.
No, I mean, man, I couldn't agree more with you.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And especially over at Galaxy, it seems like you guys are touching every aspect of the industry. And so maybe for the people, I know most of our listeners are going to know who you are, but for the ones who aren't, can you kind of just run us through the lay of the land over at Galaxy? I know that you have like a global market side and an asset management side, and you have a digital infrastructure solution. And yeah, walk us through it all.
Totally. I mean, we 6 years ago kind of set out to do exactly what we're doing today, which is for everything that we just talked about to happen, there needs to be a series of companies that are able to speak both languages, that are able to engage with the regulatory frameworks as they are, not as we all wish they would be, or not as we wish crypto native systems would be, and to navigate that, you know, 3, 5, maybe 10 year path of integration and ultimately, you know, full disruption, right? Like it's going to happen, you know, not at all and then all at once, but only if you go all the way and meet them where they are and pull them into this. And that's what our job is. And so I think through that lens strategically, you know, we really showing the rest of the world that it isn't all about speculation and it isn't all about, you know, fraud and hype and all that stuff, and just sort of staying focused. Like our job has been to build businesses that look very similar to what they look like in the traditional world. So an asset management business is a fiduciary business. Our job is to take client money and to invest it responsibly in a registered RIA construct in this new space. And sometimes that means missing great opportunities to invest because they don't make sense for clients or because the risk profile doesn't make sense for the client. So that's what we've done very well on the asset management side. On the trading side, which is our second big business, that's about facilitating client flow. That's very much like a Goldman Sachs, right? That's just helping clients get liquidity. That's hedging, that's lending, that's derivatives, that's spot trading. That's a global, you know, 24/7 apparatus that allows institutional grade clients to be able to, you know, transact in crypto in a way that's efficient for them, and that's priced well, and we're good at that. And then you know, there's a banking business in that as well. So there's a bunch of sub themes within the big businesses. And then that third business that you mentioned, infrastructure, that's really where the crypto, that's future proofing Galaxy. That's where we run nodes and we have our own blockchain engineers, and we have a big mining business and a staking business, and so we have a tokenization team and all those different sort of crypto components that the big institutions are very much focused on doing, but they have no idea how to do. Our job is to help them and to make them feel like not only is it okay, but actually we can help build your institutional knowledge in partnership with Galaxy. And so that common thread, I think, gives us an advantage because we're global, we're diversified. We have a team of 400 plus people. We've been doing it for 6 or 7 years. We're a public company in Canada, you know, FINRA broker dealer. So there's all these different sort of credentializing things that we've done that are really hard to do and cost a lot of money, right? Like the lawyers and the external fees and You know, what we have to leave on the table is expensive, but I think it's worth it because that is what is required for this next wave to happen. And I think we're a big part of the wave that's coming, and you know, we'll see, but it's going to get very competitive and we're excited about that.
Yeah. I would say you certainly are. Of course, you know, nothing's a guarantee in life. No. But one of the things that I saw Galaxy participating in, and I'm curious about, is the liquidation of the FTX estate.
Yeah. Yep.
And everybody who's, you know, in fact, I was at the dentist the other day and my dentist was like, oh, or the hygienist was like, what do you do? I'm talking about crypto. She goes, oh, wasn't there a big bad man who just went to jail for that? Like, what is that? And I'm like, oh, wow. Like, we are early. Like, you have no idea what's going on. And so tell us how you won that bid and what does it mean to liquidate this sort of, you know, estate? And, you know, how does that impact kind of people who might have even had funds that were lost on FTX?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, first of all, it was, you know, like if you look back to traditional finance roots, you know, traditional finance is arguably the most competitive environment in the planet, right? Everyone's going to be the top hedge fund manager. Everyone's trying to be the top sales and trading business. Like the bankruptcy processes are brutal, and it's an alley fight. And so I think just having the perspective of what these processes are and how they work was helpful. It was competitive. I think what won the day for us was, you know, we have credibility with the creditors, which are largely crypto people. We have institutional grade businesses. Bankruptcy, just so you guys know, has a fiduciary overlay that's even more rigid and strict than what we live up to in the asset management business as an SEC registered RIA. So the sort of burden of proof in terms of how we operate and all the processes and all the people and all the committees and all the things that we do in-house that feel like, you know, a labor of love to us. That was what I think gave the estate comfort that we were going to be aligned with them and that we were going to be aligned with creditors to get the right result and to go clean up the mess. And so that was a big process. And then, you know, of course, once you win the thing, that, again, that's when the race begins. And what it means to, you know, to liquidate, obviously there's some things that, you know, we can't talk about, but, you know, FTX had a very messy balance sheet that had liquid crypto, illiquid crypto, tokens, trust structures, they had an exchange. They had all kinds of, it's almost unbelievable. You know, it's prolific what they were able to do, notwithstanding the fact that they did a bad job of it at best, a criminal job at worst, you know, sorting through that in a way that works with the bankruptcy process is not entirely straightforward. Mm. And so our job, having had a number of people on our team who have come from credit shops, know the bankruptcy process, we have bankruptcy lawyers at Galaxy who also know crypto and DeFi. And so it was just a perfect match for that. You know, our job has been to methodically and professionally and quietly, you know, help creditors get their money back. And if we do a good job of that, you know, that means that not only is that process happening, but it's happening in a way that has integrity, that the market respects and understands, that doesn't upset this overall, you know, crypto spring that we're in right now. And I think from that perspective, we've done a really good job of it. The team has been super focused and super professional. Mm-hmm. We've already executed a big portion of the mandate. There's more to come on that. But I don't think anyone's surprised by the liquidation. I think that the risk was the liquidation was done in a thoughtless or, you know, not crypto native professional way. And we're trying to take that off the table.
Yeah. And I'll just say, like, you know, not really a follow-up question, just a comment, but, you know, kudos to you guys. I've seen these bankruptcy claims on FTX as low as, you know, 10 cents a year ago, or some of them are selling now for 60 or 70 cents on the dollar, meaning you guys did your job. You know, the bankruptcy is, you know, the estate's being made whole a little bit. And so,
You got to give credit. Thank you. I mean, you got to give credit to John Ray. I know he's a TradFi. Well, I don't even TradFi is the right word. I mean, he's a bankruptcy CEO by training. He did Enron famously amongst many other industries. And so he's really had this amazing career of sort of going into really bad situations in different contexts and then having to, you know, try to do the right thing as a fiduciary to the estate and ultimately to creditors. And, you know, he's been really methodical and focused. And, you know, one of the things that we can say about the mandate is he very much wanted a fiduciary alongside of him, which is very different than just a liquidator who goes out and sells things and tries to clip a spread or a fee. A fiduciary has to act alongside you as your partner, which is how we approach our partnership with Bloomberg on the index side, our partnership with Invesco on the ETF side, DWS in Europe, CI in Canada, ETO in Brazil. Like, we were made to partner with this kind of person and outfit. So in some level, it's very similar to everything else we've done. It's just a different context, bankruptcy court versus, you know, a jurisdictional ETP or something like that.
And I think all this is important because when you look at the previous bear market, there was a lot of companies that didn't come out of it. You know, luckily Galaxy is one of the ones that came out on top. And Bryce, like you were just saying, I think you guys have done a great job since then, just staying on top of things. But I saw this article floating around about a week ago saying that Galaxy was one of the most diverse ways or places to play the crypto market. And I know that there's a lot that goes into that, right? I mean, like, what includes diversity and like just all, the whole spectrum. So I'd love to hear from you, like, what goes into not only like coming out of something like that unscathed, but just like on top of the market and diversified like you all are.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's first of all, we have to thank you, but I think part of it is trying to stay humble through all of it and not feeling like we know everything. And I mean that sincerely. Like, risk management is not fun. It's not fun to say this is why we're not going to launch, you know, a Luna fund in asset management, which we didn't do, right? It's not fun to say we're only going to trade OTC with top tier counterparties. We're not going to trade on exchange, which is how we avoided FTX. But that's what happened. It's not fun to tell the sales guys that we're going to have really tight lending parameters in our lending business. But when everyone else is going, you know, gangbusters and make a ton of money, but guess what? Those guys aren't here, and we are. So I think basic risk management is part of it, and then like diversification was always part of the model. That was for two reasons. One, you know, in crypto, there's a real eggs in one putting all your eggs in one basket risk. And that's not really a smart way to build a business in our view. But more importantly, too, we didn't think crypto was one thing. We thought it was many things. And we all have our biases, right? Some people in-house are ETH maxis, some are Bitcoin maxis, some are NFT people, some are DeFi people. Yeah. But you know, sort of at the Galaxy level, we take the view that there are not only many different ways for crypto to evolve and flourish there that we know of, there are many that will come that we haven't even thought of yet. And so if you start with the base layer thinking and the technology, we need diversified businesses to capture the diversified opportunity set, which was always a core view of ours, even in the ICO craze. Like, the ICO craze was crazy. And we had a different version of risk management back then and protecting ourselves as a franchise. But what you learn from the ICO craze, in my opinion, was at some point tokenization is going to be a real thing. That was my takeaway, right? This is just a better mechanism for capital formation, for, you know, distributions, for embedded, you know, contracts that reflect legal agreements that, you know, whether it's an SPV or otherwise. And so in my mind, it was just a matter of time. And everyone oversimplified that. Oh, if you create a tokenized platform, then suddenly everything will tokenize. No, everything will tokenize when, you know, BlackRock, Invesco, and others build those markets from the bottom up. The tech that sits between, you know, the buyers and sellers is not the complicated part. The tokenized wrapper is not the complicated part. You need to build the market with the people that have the ability to actually drive scale to those markets, and then the real world assets come into play. And I'd say we're in like the second inning of that, or maybe the bottom of the first.
Love yeah. And I really liked what you said about risk management, right? Because it's not always pretty. It's not always exciting. And a lot of people, they come to the crypto market because they want things to be glamorous and exciting and volatile. And a real part of making money, arguably one of the most important parts, is preserving yourself and being able to survive the hard times. And if you can't do that, well, then you're going to have no money when the good times come around. So if you can't even like protect yourself there. So I really like that point, because I think that there's a lot of people
that's self-awareness and discipline, right? And that's just, honestly, that's not because we're the smartest people in the room. That's because we have experience. Like, I was at Lehman Brothers. Mike built Fortress, macro fund, and you know, Chris Ferraro, our president, came from Highbridge. Like, we've seen what goes wrong, right? And so you just have to have some self-awareness that no matter how smart you or your team think they are, the market's going to hit you in the face, and you got to be ready for that, right? And so I think, you know, it's also controversial, right? So for those that are building businesses in crypto, you do have to embrace some of the discomfort, right? It is a real trade-off. Right. You know, for some people, it makes sense to go all in on one project, and that's fine. And some people, you know, it's they want to be out on the frontier, and that's totally cool, too. Like, that's not where we're as a business supposed to live, given the people that we've attracted and the business model that we have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we'll Let's talk about that, because when you are looking at like these different altcoin plays that are out there, like what are some of the benchmarks that Galaxy finds enticing? I mean, is it active users? Is it TVL? Is it like the industry, or like you said, tokenization that they're in? Is it like the emerging industry? I know that there's some funds who just say, we are only investing in layer ones. And then there's other groups that are like, man, we want to look at new and emerging industries, whether it's tokenization or decentralized physical infrastructure or like interoperability. And so like, I guess when Galaxy is looking at like specific altcoin projects or maybe even potential investments, like what are those benchmarks that you all find important?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. And the, you know, we have the privilege of being able to say it depends on which pocket of Galaxy, right? So it's very different. You know, we have a balance sheet, right? If we're going to make a strategic investment, that's going to be something that is very much in line with the institutional mission that I, you know, alluded to earlier. And that should have, you know, commercial elements, you know, that are very specific and prescriptive and tied to, you know, just the institutional piece. If it's our liquid token fund, you know, that starts with a sort that, you know, can't go beyond, you know, sort of the mid caps, right? Because we need a qualified custodian. And so you're naturally limited to that universe, and we're benchmarking ourselves to, you know, the Bloomberg Galaxy Crypto Index, which means, you know, you're sort of setting 70% of your portfolio and then trading around the opportunity sets, which really, you know, is a little more art than science sometimes. So the answer is, in that fund, we measure all of the different pieces that you just described, and it's really about, you know, the moment in time where something is going to take hold, or the catalyst, or sort of event driven, that kind of thing. And then when you go to our crypto venture team, that's where it gets really interesting, because, you know, there's so much to unpack. I mean, we thematically are focused on core protocols and infrastructure, on the financialization aspects of crypto as our two main verticals. But you know, like you guys know, with crypto, there's so many, you know, one-offs that may suddenly become relevant to this other. So you kind of have to watch the whole space, and that's why we have investment committees. And so I'm kind of giving you a non-answer, but it really just depends on which fund or which part of the of Galaxy we're looking at. And then, you know, we need to make sure we're not disrupted too. So on the infrastructure side of our business, you know, we need to know, you know, if it's the mining business, need to know exactly what all the other miners are doing on the Bitcoin side, right? If it's tokenization or staking, you know, you got to keep an eye on all the, you know, all the projects out there. And so, like I said, it's kind of overwhelming to sort of like take it all in and have one sort of view of the world. But yeah, we have many different frameworks to unpack some of this.
Yeah, no, I love it. And as some of our listeners are probably curious, I'm certainly curious, how can the everyday person, maybe whether you're accredited or non-accredited or qualified, how can they get invested in something touching Galaxy, right? One of your venture funds or index funds, you know, how would we go about it?
Yeah, look, I first caveat, we are a Canadian public company. So in the US, I'm not able to talk about, you know, our stock. Okay. We do have a stock. You know, so I think, you know, the answer to a Canadian citizen would be to look up the Galaxy ticker and to buy our stock. But obviously, you know, there's a lot of rules around that in the US. And so I think that's, you know, that's on the individual to sort of consider. We obviously have a partnership with Invesco. So the Invesco Galaxy Bitcoin ETF, BTCO, is the ticker. That's easy to find and to participate in. Listen, we are working as aggressively as we can be to get some of the regulations changed so that we can have you know, exposure products to a broader group of people. The reality is, as an RIA, we actually have to, in the asset management business, you know, have slot count limits and investor accreditation and all those things. And so I think there's a battleground there over the next few years where we'd love to be able to have tokenized funds that are more broadly applicable. But I think, you know, generally speaking, the way to participate with Galaxy is either in the stock level, depending on where you are jurisdictionally, in our ETF, which we also have ETFs in Canada. We have an ETF in Brazil. We're launching ETFs and other ETPs in Europe, and just, you know, keeping an eye out for those products we're going to be launching. It's not just Bitcoin and Ethereum. In Canada, we have a model portfolio that actually gets out of the way, you know, programmatically when the market is moving and has been able to provably, you know, improve, you know, the Sortino ratio, of the, you know, the return stream by actually buffering the volatility to the downside of crypto. And so we're going to continue to create more products like that. Obviously, it's driven by what's allowed in any one regulatory jurisdiction. Switzerland is way ahead of Canada, which is way ahead of the US. And so it's sort of just where can we build products in different places at different times. But over time, we will have many, many more options available for people as and when that's possible for us to do.
Yeah, that sounds awesome. And certainly, you know, disclaimers in the show notes and all that stuff. None of this stuff is investment advice. Everybody has to go make their own investment decisions. And we're just a couple guys talking about things we're passionate about. But since we're talking about the international stuff, I do want to kind of, you know, touch on that a little bit more. I know we mentioned it in the beginning. And I like kind of that progression, you know, Switzerland at the top of just, you know, super, you know, financially innovative, Canada a little bit more, US still lagging behind. But you guys have products in Brazil. I mean, I'm sure you guys have trading arms in Singapore and all over the world. And tell us a little bit about, you know, which jurisdiction or jurisdictions are you excited about? What are some key things maybe in Hong Kong or whatever that are interesting that might, you know, benefit people, or, you know, maybe the United States could learn something from these. Just give us a little bit more taste of the international.
Well, here's the irony of it. The irony of it is that the U.S. exchange traded ecosystem, so ETFs that are originated from the U.S., like BTCO, like our Invesco Galaxy Bitcoin ETF, those are accessible very broadly all around the world. And so what's cool about it, and is sort of counterintuitive, is those products being launched are dramatically accelerating the conversation around Bitcoin and crypto in all kinds of jurisdictions, including in East Asia, including in the Middle East, including in Latin America. And so this, you know, you even though the US seems like it's the furthest behind, we still have this presence in global markets and global capital markets, where when something happens like this, the knock-on effects can be very positive and bizarrely can actually, you know, reflexively, like, start the wheel of now other countries are going to become more comfortable with crypto, which will then, I think, nudge the US to become less crypto unfriendly beyond just Bitcoin and ETH. And I think that's something we can also talk about. So I think it's a really significant unlock, the US ETF, from that perspective. I think, you know, generally speaking, Southeast Asia over the last 1 year in particular has been dramatically better than it was 3 years ago. I think the Chinese government made a decision to shift courses. I think, you know, partly that was a recognition that this is inevitable. Partly it was a reflection of the underlying economic, you know, perhaps problems that China was experiencing and the need to sort of loosen the reins a little bit. And then it was just a very bottom up. You asked about the market there. I mean, there's just a groundswell of interest and support. And I think, forgetting the governments for a second, it's amazing how tech forward and how open, even with many of the Singapore native frauds, right? There were very specific, like Three Arrows and some other, you know, Luna, obviously, in out of Korea. That hasn't dampened the enthusiasm broadly in Asia for crypto. I think that just starts to point towards what I said earlier, which is this need for institutional products to build confidence and then to bring the broader wealth channels in and all those things. So I'm excited about Asia. I think the regulatory environment there is improving. I think LATAM just has a very obvious history of degradation of currency. So I think Bitcoin is going to be the unlock in LATAM, and then ETH and everything follow it. You see it in Brazil, you see it in Argentina, you see it in Chile, you see it in Mexico. There's just an understanding intuitively that you probably don't want to trust the government with your money, because historically they've really screwed you. And so that starting place is just very different than in the US. And then
we had a guest on recently who was from Venezuela. And he said, my father would always, when we moved to America, my father would say, hi, my name is X, Y, and Z, and I'm from the future. And they would always say, well, what do you mean you're from the future? Well, I'm from Venezuela. Just look at what's going on here in Venezuela. It's going to happen, you know, with currency depreciation wherever. These governments get too much control.
Yeah, I hope not, but it's certainly possible, right? And if nothing else, it's a flashing yellow for us to pay attention. So I think LATAM has that element, and then look, that you really can't, between Switzerland, the Nordics, the UK, and the Middle East, there's this sort of who's going to go first. And yeah, you have the MiCA regulations, but I think what will surprise people is the degree to which, number one, the UK jumps into the game. And number two, the degree to which the Middle East might actually, really matter. And I don't mean that with, I don't mean that negatively at the Middle East, but they haven't historically been a capital markets juggernaut. Right. That said, when you look at the population growth of South Asia, the Middle East, and much of Africa, and then what's actually happening, whether it's in Saudi Arabia or Dubai or the UAE or Abu Dhabi, and even Bahrain and other places. I mean, they've been now 4 or 5 years into, supporting entrepreneurs that are building exchanges, building partnerships with large crypto companies that have people hiring locally. There's obviously a lot of investment dollars there. And so they're really close to this theme. They have a regulatory framework that works and that can passport. And really all that needs to happen is that, the match needs to catch the kindling and the fire needs to grow. So when you look across that entire landscape, it's a different version of institutional FOMO that I referenced earlier, right? Once you have people starting to go on a few things, at some point it's just going to be a race to the top in a good way. And I think what's really important for the U.S. is that the Democrats in particular they're wise enough not to hate crypto so much that they lose sight of the dollar strength, capital markets dominance, all the things that have really helped us be where we are as a country. And so I think we'll get there, but I think we'll get there the way the U.S. always gets there, which is this fits and starts, sort of thing that leaves you feeling like you're going to fall off a cliff and then suddenly we're winning again. And so that doesn't feel good for building along the way, but I have some confidence that we'll get there.
Yeah. And on the UAE, I was over there at one of the conferences called Jitex, and the largest one in Dubai. And something that UAE has that America and many other places don't have is a literal king that made a mandate. And this mandate is to have, blockchain pervasive throughout the city and, make the city smart and all that kind of stuff and underpin it with blockchain. So it's happening. It's a real thing. And it's not going away anytime soon. It's just the tip of the iceberg.
The thing that's really important about what you just said that relates back to why the institutions are actually why I mentioned it as a renaissance, the institutional knowledge at the government level in the Middle East is a great example. So Novo and I were in, Riyadh and Jeddah in 2018. And nice. I had no business meeting the finance minister and having dinner with the central bank deputy head. But I mean, at that time they were curious about all this and they wanted to learn everything they could. And so, again, mission driven for us is to go have those kinds of conversations, pretty cool personal experience in life. I mean, look, nothing's perfect. I don't mean it. I'm not getting into politics, but what I do think is being 5-6 years ahead of the trend, recognizing that, dedicating capital, and then having a strategy as a country is something, to your point, that the Middle East is uniquely able to do, and that can actually have some positives for crypto.
Yeah. Well, Steve, before we want to let you go, we do want to dive into the ETFs, and I know you mentioned Galaxy and Invesco has the BTCO ETF. Yeah. And I'm curious just about how this has affected, your business, particularly the bottom line. I mean, is this a loss leader, but just a great marketing opportunity, or is it actually profitable activity?
Well, look, the game theory of nine issuers, starting to punch each other in the face before the opening bells even happen is it's pretty, when you reflect back on it, it's pretty obvious. I mean, you've never had anything like it, first of all. Mm-hmm. You had 2 years of fee compression in 2 days. It's pretty consistent with what happened on the private fund side with the platforms in 2021. All it really tells you is that, Bitcoin, if your business model is Bitcoin, good luck. Bitcoin's very important to crypto, but your business model can't be based on Bitcoin. Bitcoin is ubiquitous. It's everywhere. It's cheap and easy to access. And that's wonderful for Bitcoin investors. And that's great. So Bitcoin is not really a profitable thing to be doing, but that's not why we're doing it to begin with, right? The firms that we've partnered with, and again, our mission at Galaxy has never been about one asset. It's about where this can all go. And I think we'll see in 5 years if we made a good bet this way. But we just don't feel like there's any world in which a Galaxy can or should go hire hundreds and hundreds of salespeople, try to build a huge TradFi brand, try to be everywhere in the world. I mean, you're going to screw that up, right? We should do what we're really good at, which is being crypto native and being a step ahead of where the traditional world is and helping them come into the the market in a reliable and responsible way. So no, for us, it's about and I don't know if loss leader is the right way to think about it, because I actually think it's about like the product suite. I think it's about the education that sits behind it. I think it's about Certainly. The research that sits behind it. I think it's about extending the crypto ethos into pockets of the world that maybe aren't, you know, necessarily hearing it a certain way. And so it's a longer term strategy. It is a way for us to cover the world and be global while still being a relatively small team. And I think it's going to like the way that I think about it for our business is, over the next 3 to 5 years, if we do a good job, we're just going to have an accordion that continues to expand, and it's going to be very easy for us to add more products and ultimately move into a tokenized and on-chain world, you know, in a seamless way with our partners. And that's also mission driven, right? We're pulling institutions in through the partnership. So I think, you know, that's my plan. We'll see what happens, but that's the intent, is to do all those things.
Yeah, and man, it wouldn't be ETF talk if we didn't bring up the Ethereum ETF. That thing is on the horizon. We're looking at the deadline of May 23rd, 2024. Before that, about 2 weeks out from right now, which is February 27th, we have the Dentoon upgrade, which is supposed to go live on the mainnet. And there's a lot of talk and excitement about this, and rightfully so. I mean, you look at Bitcoin and Bitcoin's price since the ETF was launched, we have just billions of dollars in inflows. And now people are looking at Ethereum and saying, hey, Ethereum is significantly lower in terms of market cap than Bitcoin, which means that if we see anywhere near the same amount of inflows, maybe even half as many inflows, a fraction of it, it could drastically impact price in a really positive way. And so people are starting to get excited when this comes around. And I know we just had James Seyfert on, who is like an expert in this stuff. I mean, so much smarter than myself. And basically what he was saying is that he's looking at around a 60% likelihood that it gets approved, which is good. I mean, that's over a 50% chance. It's not just a coin flip. The odds are in our favor. But like, what do you think about all this stuff?
Well, actually, James's colleague, Eric caught me a little off guard on ETF exchange. And I jumped in with I think it was a 70-30 prediction for the year. But it's,
there we go.
I mean, it's. First of all, in December, I was feeling for the ETH crowd. It really, like, it just wasn't a lot of love. And I mean, I love Bitcoin, but I really also love ETH. I think it's got a unique place, and I think its time is yet to come. And I think, you know, you mentioned the upgrades, like as a network, Ethereum is an amazing thing. And obviously Vitalik's amazing. And so there's I don't worry about the back end of Ethereum. I think it's much more about the path to becoming an institutional asset and the story of Ethereum. What's cool about Ethereum is I actually think it's like, if you could draw this up and say, what's the fastest way to get, you know, the world into crypto, you would have started with Ethereum, not with Bitcoin, because Bitcoin's this subversive, like, you know, it's our money, we're the government. And it immediately touches the nerve. Ethereum is not that. Ethereum is, you know, it's a tech play. It's, think of it like your NASDAQ exposure, and you already make bets on Amazon, and really this is the cloud. It's decentralized, like whatever your analog is, that as you think about Ethereum, and people are more comfortable with that. So I think once Ethereum is sort of out of the gates, it's actually going to have, like, I don't think you should look to the ETH futures launch as a proxy for the interest in Ethereum flows once you do have an ETF. I think you're going to actually be surprised by the degree to which there's an open-mindedness to Ethereum that you don't have to Bitcoin. And so I think Ethereum will do really well in an ETF context. The logic of the court cases against the SEC last year should hold for Ethereum. Who knows? It's an election year. Anything can happen, right? You know, we don't know all the things that are happening behind closed doors. What I do think is clear is that, you know, the operating guidelines, although they're not as clear as I'd like them to be, have very much been orienting around Ethereum as not being a security. And if that's in fact true, I really don't see any reason why the same 1933 Act wrapper and approach to Bitcoin shouldn't apply to Ethereum. It's been around since 2015. It's decentralized. It doesn't look like a security. Like, so I think there's all these things that are going for it. You know, we'll see. We're obviously on file with the Invesco Galaxy Ethereum ETF. We can't talk about the details of the filing, but just like we are on the Bitcoin side, we're you know, involved and very much, you know, pushing for that outcome.
I mean, a lot of politicians are using crypto now as like a campaign point. So with it being an election year, you know, fingers crossed this thing gets passed and we see a lot more upside.
It doesn't make any sense to hate for Democrats to hate crypto. It really doesn't. If you just go back to the basics, I think that, you know, there's rational people in the Democratic Party that will understand, if nothing else, the politics of this being bad. And ideally, you know, more aspirationally, like why this is a good thing, and the younger generation is embracing it for a reason. So we're going to continue to tell that story. We're active in DC. We've got an outfit down there that's very put together the same way we do everything else, and we'll keep fighting.
My hope is that crypto could be the great unifier that gets our country back to being not so bipartisan, right? Like, let's have Republicans and Democrats and independents and whoever all agree that, you know, this is going to be a great tool for our financial future. And hopefully, I mean, I know it's optimistic, but hopefully it could just unify us just a little bit more.
That would be awesome. And I think I honestly think it's like kind of having grace when you're sort of, you don't have to, like, I think two things are missing in DC. One, I don't think that we've told the story the right way. And I think we need to look at it through the lens of DC and be a little charitable to why things are the way they are, even though they're super dysfunctional. I disagree with a lot of it. Like, there's a reason for it. You have to engage with that reason. And it's also a little bit of like, people are defensive and they don't want to ask stupid questions. And so you got to help people. Right. And so the education piece, even when there's someone who's coming at you, right, the grace of being able to say, like, totally hear you, that makes sense, but here's what you're missing, and that's okay. And let's talk about it. Right. Like, that's a little bit of how this has to happen.
Yeah. Well, hey, Steve, last question for you. Yeah. Any bold predictions for this year?
You know, I we're a public company. I get stuck on this one because I want to. The one that I said about a month ago, which I got laughed at for, but looks a lot more reasonable, is that within 2 years you're going to have a $10 trillion market cap in crypto. So I'm going to stick with that one.
There we go.
We hit 2 trillion since then. So I'm 20% of the way there. We'll see.
I love it. Hey, Steve, thank you so much for joining us today. And I mean, this was incredible. This was a magnum opus here of the Crypto 101 podcast. And hopefully you enjoyed it. And hopefully you could send it around to your friends and tell them, hey, if you ever want to hear my thoughts, check out the Crypto 101 podcast. I spilled all.
You guys are awesome. Thanks for the work you do. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Take care.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.